two different systems. We assume that a first system of the apparatus takes up the stimuli of perception but retains nothing from them, that is, it has no memory, and that behind this there lies a second system which transforms the momentary excitement of the first into lasting traces. This would then be a diagram of our psychic apparatus. Again, the arrow pointing up and to the right, leading to a first vertical line labeled P. There follow three vertical lines, with the same distance between each of them, the first labeled MEM, the second MEM apostrophe, the third MEM double apostrophe. There then follows a large gap to the final vertical line labeled capital M, and then the arrow pointing downward and to the right. It is known that from the perceptions that act on the P system, we retain something else as lasting as the content itself. Our perceptions prove to be connected with one another in memory, and this is especially the case when they have once fallen together in simultaneity. We call this the fact of association. It is now clear that if the P system is entirely lacking in memory, it certainly cannot preserve traces for the associations. The individual P elements would be intolerably hindered in their function if a remnant of former connection should make its influence felt against a new perception. Hence we must, on the contrary, assume that the memory system is the basis of the association. The fact of the association then consists in this, that in consequence of the diminutions in resistance and a smoothing of the ways from one of the MEM elements, the excitement transmits itself to a second rather than to a third MEM system. On further investigation, we find it necessary to assume not one, but many such MEM systems in which the same excitement propagated by the P elements experiences a diversified fixation. The first of these MEM systems will contain, in any case, the fixation of the association through simultaneity, while in those lying further away, the same exciting material will be arranged according to other forms of concurrence, so that relationships of similarity, etc., might perhaps be represented through these later systems. It would naturally be idle to attempt to report in words the psychic significance of such a system. Its characteristic would lie in the intimacy of its relations to elements of raw memory material. That is, if we wish to point to a profounder theory in the gradations of the resistances to conduction toward these elements. We may insert here an observation of a general nature which points perhaps to something of importance. The P system, which possesses no capability of preserving changes and hence no memory, furnishes for our consciousness the entire manifoldness of the sensible qualities. Our memories, on the other hand, are unconscious in themselves. Those that are most deeply impressed form no exception. They can be made conscious, but there can be no doubt that they develop all their influences in the unconscious state. What we term our character is based, to be sure, on the memory traces of our impressions, and indeed on these impressions that have affected us most strongly, those of our early youth, those that almost never become conscious. But when memories become conscious again, they show no sensible quality, or a very slight one, in comparison to the perceptions. If, now, it can be confirmed that memory and quality exclude each other as far as consciousness in the psi systems is concerned, a most promising insight reveals itself to us in the determinations of the neuron excitement. What we have so far assumed concerning the composition of the psychic apparatus at the sensible end follows regardless of the dream and the psychological explanations derived from it. The dream, however, serves as a source of proof for the knowledge of another part of the apparatus. We have seen that it became impossible to explain the dream formation unless we ventured to assume two psychic instances, one of which subjected the activity of the other to a critique, as a consequence of which the exclusion from consciousness resulted. We have seen that the criticizing instance entertains closer relations with consciousness than the criticized. The former stands between the latter and consciousness like a screen. We have, moreover, found essential reasons for identifying the criticizing instance with that which directs our waking life and determines our voluntary conscious actions. If we now replace these instances in the development of our theory by systems, the criticizing system is then to be ascribed to the motor end because of the fact just mentioned. We now enter both systems in our scheme and express, by the names given them, their relation to consciousness. Again, the diagram, beginning on the left-hand side, with an arrow pointing up and to the right, to a first vertical line labeled P, a second vertical line labeled M, a third vertical line labeled M apostrophe, and a series of dotted lines implying continuance. Further to the right-hand side, there are two vertical lines bracketed by the abbreviation UNC for unconscious. The final vertical line is labeled with the abbreviation FORC for foreconscious, and ending on the right-hand side with an arrow pointing down and to the right, labeled capital M. The last of the systems at the motor end we call the foreconscious, in order to denote that exciting processes in this system can reach consciousness without any further detention, provided certain other conditions be fulfilled, e.g. the attainment of a certain intensity, a certain distribution of that function which must be called attention, and the like. This is at the same time the system which possesses the keys to voluntary motility. The system behind it we call the unconscious because it has no access to consciousness except through the foreconscious, in the passage through which its excitement must submit to certain changes. In which of these systems now do we localize the impulse to the dream formation? For the sake of simplicity, let us say in the system UNC. To be sure, we shall find in later discussions that this is not quite correct, that the dream formation is forced to connect with dream thoughts which belong to the system of the foreconscious. But we shall learn later, when we come to deal with the dream wish, that the motive power for the dream is furnished by the UNC, and owing to this latter movement, we shall assume the unconscious system as the starting point of the dream formation. This dream impulse, like all other thought structures, will now strive to continue itself in the foreconscious, and thence to gain admission to consciousness. Experience teaches us that the road leading from the foreconscious to consciousness is closed to the dream thoughts during the day by the resistance of the censor. At night, the dream thoughts gain admission to consciousness, but the question arises in what way and because of what change. If this admission was rendered possible to the dream thoughts through the fact that the resistance watching on the boundary between the unconscious and foreconscious sinks at night, we should then get dreams in the material of our presentations which did not show the hallucinatory character which just now interests us.